Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for High Velocity Radio.
Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show, where we celebrate top performers producing better results in less time. Katie Galley and Lee Cantor here with you this afternoon. Please join me in welcoming to the broadcast, President of Heinz Marketing, Matt Heinz.
Welcome, Matt.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, when we were putting together this Marketing Superhero series, your name came up multiple times from the early guests on this, so I'm excited to have you as part of the show.
Oh, wow. I'm humbled, but yeah, appreciate being here.
So can we talk a little bit before we get into it, maybe your background, how you got into marketing?
Yeah, this has all been a giant mistake, quite honestly. I'm a journalism and political science major from the University of Washington, and was a reporter right out of school at a suburban Seattle newspaper, and ended up not loving it. It wasn't exactly what I wanted, and kind of got a curious itch elsewhere, so ended up at a PR firm for a while. Was at Microsoft doing a variety of marketing and biz dev roles, and then ran marketing at a couple startups here in Seattle for several years before I kind of just decided to follow my itch and try to do my own thing. And it's been about 9 years since then, and just have really enjoyed it.
Now, do your journalism friends think you went to the dark side?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, when you're in journalism school and when you're, fresh out of school, you think you're going to change the world. I mean, I was very much thinking I was going to be of the Woodward and Bernstein mold and right the wrongs and, really be the fourth estate. So, going from there to a PR firm was definitely crossing over to the dark side. But, I really, this is not what I intended, when I was in school. For sure. But, it's been very serendipitous in that way that I've been able to get into a career that I really enjoy. I love the kind of marketing we do, very revenue responsible, very focused on business outcomes. It's really, really gratifying.
Now, how have you seen the role of marketing change, especially to me with this blurring of the lines of, journalism and the media and marketing and PR?
Yeah, I mean, it's exciting and terrifying, I think, depending on how you look at it, and sometimes just in the same day, it can be both. I think marketers are being held far more directly accountable for the business and revenue outcomes of their functions, which is exciting in that I think it elevates the importance and impact of marketing. One of our VPs, says marketing is the most strategic function in the business. You can build a great product, but if you haven't identified the market, if you can't create a market, then you don't have a market to sell to, and that is marketing's job. So I think that is getting very exciting. I do think though that we're working in a world now where marketing has a direct level of revenue responsibility. That marketing is often being given, especially in B2B, often given a revenue number that they're expected to influence. Now they may not close the deal, but there's a difference between being at the table when the deal gets closed and having direct influence over getting to that table in the first place. And so I think, we now have data, we have tools to be able to better measure when that is happening and why it's happening. And I think it impacts all the way to the beginning of the buying journey, whether you're a consumer product or a B2B company, how you focus, how are you focused on your target buyer? How are you engaging them in a conversation that is value added at every step, that is helping them discover the cost of a problem they did or didn't know that they have, that naturally makes them want to engage in your sales process. It's an exciting time for marketing for sure.
Well, I think that marketing is expanded beyond even that to the point of they're now part of the conversation when you have an existing client, you're nurturing that existing client, you're trying to infiltrate maybe other divisions of the company. I mean, the job of marketing and sales are hand in hand, arm in arm throughout the entire lifespan of the customer.
Yeah, it's exciting. I mean, it's a life cycle for sure. I think a lot of marketers spend the majority of their time working on acquiring customers. And yet, sometimes your best chance of getting increased revenue and longevity of revenue is just to keep the customers that you have. Either keep them for a longer period of time or increase the business you're doing with those customers over time. We've seen some data coming out of, a number of different points of research, including from CEB, that tells us that the biggest impact, the biggest driver of retention and lifetime value of existing customers is the perception by the customer that they are getting value. It's reinforcement of the value proposition they signed up in the first place. It's seeing examples of other companies seeing success with the product or service as well. That is a playbook. That is a directive to marketing and for content marketers in particular to be able to tell those stories in an ongoing and compelling way to existing company, to existing customers, to directly increase lifetime value and longevity of business.
Now, when you're working with a client, do you have a kind of a challenge in articulating the, you know, the value and the ROI conversation?
From marketing in general or from us?
Well, just when you're going in maybe with a new customer who maybe doesn't see marketing in the way that you see it, do you have a hard time kind of educating them on this kind of new way of marketing?
Yes and no. I would say if we're talking to someone that doesn't understand that this is marketing's function, that still sees marketing as the arts and crafts department, those aren't companies that typically invest in us. You know, they may be looking more for you know, a creative shop or someone that's going to do pretty ads or someone that's going to do marketing for the sake of marketing. And there's still plenty of companies that prioritize that. That's not what we do. So, you know, we can describe a more revenue responsible form of marketing, and companies that don't want that aren't coming to us. I think oftentimes we hear from companies that say, listen, we're not hitting our number. How do we fix that? We don't have agreement between sales and marketing on their objectives and goals, let alone their strategy. Can you help fix that? Or we have companies that realize that their marketing is not as efficient and not as focused as it could be, and they want to continue to do good creative work, but make sure that they're doing it in a way that is driving business value in a repeatable and scalable and predictable way. So I guess long story short, I think, you know, companies that come to us that we work with often already either have a mindset of revenue responsible marketing or desire that and are trying to figure out how to get that.
Well, you mentioned that one of the pain points that a company that might come to you has is that misalignment with sales. How do you kind of get them moving in the right direction where sales and marketing are working arm in arm?
Well, it really starts with marketing. I think marketing has to embrace a different set of objectives. You know, traditionally, marketing has been measured based on, at best, you know, leads generated, and at worst, clicks and likes and impressions and web traffic. And I'm not saying that those things aren't important. They are clearly important, but they are a means unto an end. And I would prefer marketing to be measured based on metrics that are closer to revenue and sales goals. Even if marketing isn't willing to step up to a percent of revenue or sales that is influenced by marketing, I at least would like to see marketing responsible for some sales pipeline contribution goal. This is easier said than done for a lot of companies, right? I mean, you know, you got a lot of marketing organizations that where they see that as a scary thing. They see that as outside of their control. But if you talk to a salesperson, they will tell you that most things are outside of their control. They don't control when someone buys. They don't control when someone's ready to buy. But there are things you do control in terms of having a bigger pipeline, engaging more prospects earlier in the process, engaging the right prospects early in the process that can make your sales efforts as well as your marketing efforts more effective. So I think the first thing marketers need to do is change their objectives to align with the sales organization. When that changes, It over time has a pretty dramatic impact down into the organization that changes the culture, changes the focus, and changes the very nature of what's getting done by marketing that much better aligns with what sales is trying to do as well.
Now, are you seeing companies, you mentioned culture, when you have this kind of integration between marketing and sales, where they are working together and they are kind of, you know, the marketing is more is more kind of connected to revenue. Do you see the compensation for the marketers being adjusted as well? Because there was a time where the salespeople get all the financial incentives for closing, and then the marketing's job of nurturing and, you know, kind of spreading throughout the organization isn't as compensated maybe as the person who closed the deal.
Yeah, it's a great question. I have not seen many organizations move to sort of a commission-based model for marketing. I've seen some do it, and frankly, I have not seen it done successfully yet in a sustainable way. I also don't find that marketing really needs or wants that level of variability. I think they're fine letting the sales team have a more commission-based role with a potentially higher upside. I think, you know, but I do think if you have a base plus bonus kind of a role for marketing, if we're bonusing people based on hitting a web traffic goal, if we're bonusing them based on hitting some marketing activity goal, then they're going to focus on that activity. Versus if we say, listen, we need marketing to generate 40% of pipeline for our team this year. We need marketing to have influence, to have measured influence over 40% of our closed deals in the next four quarters. That's a different metric. And so you're moving the cheese, right? I mean, if you change what the bonus is based on, you will change the behavior for marketing as well.
Right. But if you really believe that, and culturally, if everybody is aligned, it makes sense to me. At some point, we're going to see that evolution take place where marketing and sales are going to be compensated in the same way. Because I think, you know, the guy who closes your initial deal, that's valuable. I'm not discounting that. But if your marketing can keep that person another year, 2 years, 3 years, or keep that company around, that's valuable too. I mean,
it is. Yeah. I mean, from a retention standpoint, I think that makes a lot of sense. And if you can tie that back to marketing, if you can show that marketing had direct influence over that increased lifetime value, I have no problem giving marketing, you know, financial credit for that. And I think because we see so many companies spend the majority of their effort on acquisition versus retention, we haven't seen the compensation reflect the retention side. But I think you're absolutely right. It is a huge opportunity, moving forward.
I think that I see a closer tie-in to revenue from nurturing. You can tie that in closer compared to the guy played golf one time, 3 years ago, and that's what got the deal closed. That was the sales guy's last touch point or the last meaningful touch point with the person, that he can, play golf or take him, to a ball game compared to,
relationship selling still makes a difference. I mean, it's true that people don't always buy the best option. Sometimes they buy from their favorite,
right?
But that has limits. That has limits, right? I mean, someone coming in, if you hire a sales rep with an amazing Rolodex, the Rolodex only goes so far. And when you've got, especially in business to business, settings, when you've got now on average 6.8 members of a buying committee that are involved in making a decision, if your Rolodex only includes one of those 6.8 people, then you may have some influence, but you don't have enough influence to get everyone across the board. And if all you're selling is your relationship, that is at best only going to last, a short period of time, and at worst, not nearly be enough to get these complex deals across the line. So relationships are clearly an advantage. Getting out and meeting people is an advantage. Knowing someone and being able to get them to respond to your communication, huge advantage, but it only goes so far.
Absolutely. Now we're kind of touching on a little bit about account-based marketing in terms of, there are 6.8 or 7 people that you got to touch in order to sell nowadays into enterprise. How are you seeing that from a strategic standpoint? Are you seeing that as kind of a trend nowadays, or is that a fad, do you think?
Well, I think that over the last maybe year and a half, hashtag ABM has been very much a fad. I don't think it is going to replace other marketing. I believe it is going to make marketing more precise and more accountable and more successful. I think the two remnant legacy impacts of account-based marketing as a fad are going to be, one, what we've talked about here, which is better coordination of what sales and marketing are doing together, getting marketing to embrace a level of revenue responsibility and focus on the right accounts and the right business, focusing less on more and more on right. Mm-hmm. And I also think it's going to increase our focus on an application of the complexity of the buying process. We tend to treat leads as individual units. We tend not to really understand and account for the complexity of how our buyers now buy. Building consensus among that buying committee of 6.8 people is incredibly important and differentiating for those that are going to win those deals versus those that are going to get stalled. So I think that understanding of the buying committee, that coordination of sales and marketing in a more comprehensive and integrated way, that's where companies that are doing account-based marketing are going to win.
And then are you seeing that because the technology is changing so quickly and it is it becomes almost like a crutch that we have the technology, so let's then that becomes the thing we're leveraging and we're kind of forgetting about the human-to-human component?
Well, I mean, we have technology now that makes account-based marketing easier, that makes communication easier, that makes marketing faster and more efficient. But technology is not your strategy. You know, everything we just talked about in terms of alignment of objectives for sales and marketing, you know, alignment of communication at each stage of the buying journey, more segmented communication with members of that buying community. You can do all of that with zero technology. You can do that with a spreadsheet and a telephone.
Right.
So, you know, technology can be a crutch that can keep you from doing this well. Ideally, technology is the enabler of the strategy you put in place in the first place.
So let's talk about your firm. When you're going to market and you're working with people, do you find most of your clients are coming from inbound, that they're finding you from your books and your thought leadership that you're putting out?
We do. You know, I don't have a sales team. You're talking to the sales guy for marketing right now. So, you know, we get a lot of, it's word mouth, it's inbound, it's referrals. You know, we're not a big organization, but, you know, we've got great people. We like to focus on, you know, our values and our culture and the way we do work. And then we like to find clients that sort of meet that from an approach and from a value standpoint as well. So, you know, we've been very fortunate that we've been able to work with some amazing companies in B2B and have been able to continue to grow that way.
So now when you're looking back at your career and coming from the journalist background, how important is content marketing when you're working with clients? Is that kind of built into the program when you're working with a B2B client?
Yeah, it's critical. I mean, I think, you know, Ann Hanley, who's, you know, been, you know, highly prominent in B2B content marketing for years, you know, we had her speak at an event here in Seattle a couple of years ago, and one of her slides just really struck me, has stuck with me. She said, everything the light touches is content. You know, it's not just a blog post, it's not just a white paper. Every touch point you have with a company is content. The voicemail they leave you is content. The way the receptionist answers the phone is content. What people's perception of you when they come to your booth at a trade show, that's content. So every interaction you have with a prospect or a customer is a way to position yourself, is leaving an impression of what that customer thinks of you. I think my background as a journalist, I think absolutely helps me as a marketer today. I think you've got a lot of product marketers that are writing content about their company and about their product. People don't want to read about their company and your product. People want to read about themselves. One of the things I appreciate about journalists and a journalism background and journalism degrees is that it teaches you how to tell stories. It teaches you how to tell stories that are meaningful to other people. So I'm excited to see that content marketing departments around the world now are being staffed by former journalists that don't just know how to write about a product. They know how to tell stories to their customers. And so I think that storytelling ability is really critical. And I would also say, you know, key to us being able to, you know, grow our business through referral, word of mouth, and relationships is the ability to produce and share content over the last several years that has hopefully been valuable, that has kept people's attention until the point where they or someone in their network, you know, has a need.
Now, is that maybe some advice for companies out there to embrace the storytelling and to kind of get out of the feature mode and the list of, you know, the kind of the nuts and bolts of whatever their product or service is and get into the impact and the story that they're kind of generating?
Yeah, let me put it this way. I think you don't earn the right to talk about yourself until you talk about your customer. And I think there's a couple ways to sort of systematize that. I would say the beginning of the buying process, the beginning of your sales process, is a phase that Serious Decisions called the loosening of the status quo. Your prospects may have a need, but they may not know it. They may have a need, but they haven't prioritized it. What are you going to do with an insight or a conversation or with some point of value that's going to help them see their situation differently? It's going to challenge the status quo that exists today. And eventually, they measure or perceive that difference in a way that gets them to commit to change. Not commit to buy, not commit to a demo, but commit to change for themselves to achieve an outcome they have now prioritized. That point, that decision point, getting someone to commit to change, I believe is the hardest part of the sales process and the most important part of the sales process. But what precedes that, even precedes getting someone to challenge their status quo, is what we call stage zero of the buying process and selling process, which is attention. You first have to earn someone's attention. You have to get it and keep it and earn it to the point where they want to hear more from you. And that is a challenge for every organization, for every sales rep, for every marketer, is to get out of their own way, to get out of the product conversations they're having too often, and to share information that earns the attention of your most important prospects.
So when you're working with a client, how do you help them get to that point? Like, what are some of the tactics you use to kind of attract that attention in an elegant way and not a, you know, hit you over the head, pitchy way?
Yeah, I mean, foundationally, you have to better understand who you're selling to, right? Not just in terms of, like, you know, building a list, but knowing who they are, what do they care about? If you've got 6.8 members of a buying committee, there may be 6.8, or there maybe there's 3 or 4 different perspectives. You got a finance guy, you got a product guy, you got a marketing guy, you got an IT guy. What do they think differently? What are their status quos? What are the things they're worried about? What are the things they're dealing with today? And what topics come out of those issues that you could address to get their attention? So again, a different way of saying that is, I think it's really important for companies to think about their target personas. Who are the people they're selling to? Not just companies, right? I mean, you can have your target industry, but buildings don't sign checks. People do. So who are the people that you care about? Who are the people that you need to engage with? And what do they care about so that you can start creating content in that direction?
Now, it sounds a lot like you're talking about empathy as kind of a key component of this process. Do you have a difficult time, you know, working with journalists, especially if you hire journalists or people hire journalists to get the empathy part right? Because they have to now look through the eyes of the client or the customer, and then almost then look through the eyes of their client and customer to make sure that everything is aligned. And the journalist tends to kind of have that, let me find something, you know, let me dig deeper in terms of, you know, finding the truth. And then you're, in a lot of cases, you're trying to persuade someone.
It's a great question. I think at the heart of the answer is what you said, which is empathy. If you understand your prospect's issues, if you can prioritize providing insights to help them address or understand or solve those issues, it's a quickened path to credibility and trust. And I don't think you have to take that to the point of sort of, you know, investigative journalism that has to be sort of, you know, too edgy. You can certainly do that in some contexts as well. But the beginning of attention, getting someone's attention, doesn't have to be long form content. It can be links to other people's content. It can be, you know, people occasionally seeing your social posts and thinking they're interesting. I mean, you know, the beginning of attention building for companies at the pipe in the pipeline is kind of like driving by someone's house at 40 miles an hour and trying to get something in the mailbox. You know, you're going to miss most of the time. But eventually you're going to get a few things in there and the prospect's going to see it and they're going to think that's interesting. And eventually they're going to recognize your car as it drives by and associate that with good content as well. And then they're going to want to check their mailbox when they see the car drive by, right? And so, like, this isn't something that happens in a 15-minute phone call. This isn't something that happens, you know, when you send one email to someone and all of a sudden you're there. But I think it is important to understand that, you know, trust takes time, attention building takes time. But once you have it, you still have to continue to earn it and keep it to have the sales conversation that you want.
Now, do you mind sharing an example of maybe you working with somebody, a client? You don't have to name the name if you don't want to, but where you took them from a place where they were struggling and then you were able to maybe help them pivot or kind of embrace this type of marketing and really kind of kill it?
Yeah, I mean, it happens quite a bit. You know, we worked with a company selling a technology platform that was focused purely on demos and talking about features. And they were doing okay. You know, there were plenty of people in their market that knew what they wanted to buy and wanted to see the demo and cared about this long list of features. But they were so focused on the what, they failed to really establish the why for prospects that didn't get it yet. So when we were able to step back and really focus on the why, focus on the issues that their products solve, focus on the issues that many of their prospects had that they hadn't been able to solve yet, we were able to exponentially increase the size of their pipeline, the people interested in hearing more. They did more demos to people that didn't care about the demo as much as they cared about solving the problem. I mentioned earlier that stage of the buying process when someone gets to a commitment to change. I mean, to a certain extent, you know, they don't really care what the solution is at that point. Hardware, software, magic, dragons, pixie dust, as long as it solves that problem, as long as it delivers that change that they are now committed to. But if the foundation is establishing the why. Why is this important? What is it going to deliver? And then how you deliver it, the demo and the features, that becomes secondary. That becomes kind of table stakes to the foundation of why.
And then do you find that it's difficult to get the client to articulate the why, because sometimes they get so enamored with the, you know, the better mousetrap?
Yeah. Yeah, you do. I mean, and I think even companies that are committed to improving their sales and marketing processes will often fall back on their products and their stories. I mean, well, I've seen many companies say, oh, we've got lots of great thought leadership content, and then they show it to you and it's all just sales pitches. It's, or, you know, there may be some nice topic, but it ends with, well, here's how our product solves for that, right? Which just looks like a sales pitch. So I think, you know, it can be hard for companies that, you know, are very focused on building pipeline, that have some immediate goals, that have some urgency around building their pipeline, to feel like they can afford the patience required to build attention and to build that qualification and that inherent buyer interest up front. But if you don't do that, if you don't have a prospect that is committed to change, if all they're doing is, you know, is kicking the tires, you're going to have a very unqualified pipeline, and you're going to convert a very small percent of that pipeline into closed deals, and you're going to miss your number, because it won't take that much for the prospect to get disinterested. It won't take much of a fire drill to get them to go focus on something else and not come back to you. That foundation of need, that foundation of commitment to change, is critical to increasing the qualification and the urgency and the conversion rate of your pipeline.
Now, do you have a difficult time kind of getting your client focused on metrics that matter, and as opposed to, you know, maybe we call them cosmetrics, where, you know, it's the old page view, the, you know, the impressions and things like that, that maybe they used to track, and then get them closer to the metrics that matter when it comes terms in terms of revenue. And look, Bob is the guy that's going to buy your thing, or he's one of the seven. The closer you get to Bob is better than, you know, the 50,000 people who downloaded the white paper.
Right. So the short answer is no. I think, you know, once someone engages with us, I mean, they're committed to developing a more revenue responsible marketing culture. And so that doesn't mean that doesn't happen overnight. It doesn't mean I'm not, like, if I'm changing the objectives for someone on a marketing team, if they used to be focused on clicks and likes, and I now want them to focus on influence to pipeline, like, they may not know how to do that, and that may be a scary thing. So we have to manage the cultural changes there appropriately to make sure people feel safe in making that change. But, you know, very quickly, marketing team members, very quickly, marketing leaders, very quickly, executive teams really rally around these more revenue-centric messages and revenue-centric metrics, because it sounds like what the rest of the company's focused on. Like, when you've got metrics as a marketer that your CFO already understands, that matches the metrics in your CFO's own dashboard, like, you are eliminating friction in the organization, and you now have a CFO that thinks you're focused on the right thing, that might even be willing to give you the benefit of the doubt on things they don't understand, because they know that the outcomes you're focused on are their outcomes as well. So, you know, there are definitely, you know, cultural impacts to making that change that you have to watch and have to manage. But making the shift to focus on the right metrics, that can happen very quickly and really drive a lot of the other behavior changes along the way.
So, like, what do you say to the person that, you know, says, well, that sounds good, but how many, you know, how many likes am I going to get, or how many followers, or how many more, you know, impressions? Like, what's your answer to when they ask for those metrics that don't matter?
I would say the metrics may still matter. But you have to separate your operational dashboard from your executive dashboard. You still have to manage the work of marketing. Right. I mean, you still have to, you know, if you believe you're going to get greater pipeline over time from establishing your own media channel through your content and through your email and through your social, you have to focus on increasing that viewership. You have to focus on more people on your email list. You have to focus on more people on your blog. You have to focus on getting that kind of growth. So those metrics are still going to be important in some context. The problem is many marketers, when they report on their efforts, they stop there. They go up to the executive team and say, our focus is clicks and likes and retweets and traffic. That's the operational side. What does that translate into? Where's the pipeline? Where are the new customers? Where is the influence directly measured on new sales and retention that comes from that? So it's not a matter of what we're no longer measuring and prioritizing. It's a matter of putting separation between the management of marketing and the communication of the impact of marketing for the business.
So it's not an or, it's an and. And you're just trying to kind of weight the value to each side of that coin?
Yeah. You just really got to know which is which.
Mm-hmm. And it's so you're saying that the operational side is more about the, you know, kind of more of the old school superficial stuff, and then the CFO and the revenue side is more about the new sales and the business part.
And it's not to say that, you know, clicks and likes and retweets have no value. Those are the building blocks of marketing. I mean, if we're simply going to say, like, well, we need to measure the influence of marketing, like, well, but based on what? What happened? Well, you've got content you people are engaging with. You've got email campaigns. You've got direct mail campaigns. And those can have a greater impact either based on sending more or sending better, right? And sending better might be, you know, having a lower number of people you target, but the right people, and getting a higher conversion rate on that. So I may not care about 10,000 prospects. I may only care about 100 prospects. But if I need to get a higher conversion rate out of those 100 prospects to hit my number, then my offers need to be better. My landing pages need to be better. And so now we do get into more tactical operational marketing, but it still has to be focused on the right thing. Simply generating more does not necessarily mean better. Just because you have more clicks doesn't mean those are the right clicks. Just because you have more social followers doesn't mean those new followers are members of your qualified prospect definition.
Absolutely. Now, for you and your firm, do you specialize in certain niches? Are you like highly technology oriented, healthcare? Where do you play best?
We are purely B2B, but within that, you know, we're kind of all over the place. I mean, because we have really grown organically through, you know, referrals and word of mouth. We have clients in technology, but we have clients in healthcare, in manufacturing, in pharmaceutical, agriculture. I mean, it's kind of all over the map. I think that the process and discipline we've developed to help marketers sort of orient themselves around the right metrics, and to really help sales and marketing teams better structure and execute on a real buyer-centric selling process, that effort has really transcended industry, and we've found it to be successful throughout various different B2B industries.
As long as they're open to that type of thinking, then they're the right fit for you guys.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we do get calls, and we talk to companies or get referrals to companies, you know, on a periodic basis where it's clear that they really are comfortable with arts and crafts marketing in B2B. And that typically is not a place where we can be successful.
Right. So branding, that's not as big of a priority.
Branding is extremely important, but branding for the sake of branding is not.
Right.
If you're developing advertisements with the goal of winning awards, as opposed to winning business, you know, that's not something that, you know, we tend to get involved with.
Exactly. That's and B2B, I would think that's the right path to follow, is focus on the results, yeah, not awards. Now, if somebody wanted to get a hold of you, what's the best way?
You can find us online, heinzmarketing.com, H-E-I-N-Z, marketing.com, or on Twitter at Heinz Marketing. And if you want to email me directly, I'm just Matt, M-A-T-T, at heinzmarketing.com.
And do you have any events? I know you do a lot of webinars. Do you have anything coming up?
We have a number. Yeah, I mean, I get around and speak at a lot of B2B marketing events. So, you know, it's coming up on fall season, so I'll be at a number of the fall marketing events speaking. We have a series of online events that we do. If you go to heinzmarketing.com and go to resources, you'll find a directory of some of our upcoming online events. We've got a pipeline development workshop in early October that we're doing. And then we've got a number of the events and workshops we've done that are on demand and available in that resource section as well.
And the pain that one of these companies are having, like one of the pains is a misalignment between sales and marketing. Are there any other pains that a company's having where the best thing to do is call you, Matt?
Yeah, I mean, I would say sort of fundamentally, if you're not hitting your number, if you don't know how to hit the number in front of you, if you feel like there's misalignment between sales and marketing, those are three problem areas that we get called about a lot. So if you're feeling like you've got one or more of those, we'd love to share. And quite frankly, you know, there's, you feel free to call us and we'll help filter for you. But on our website, between our blog and our best practice guides and our on-demand workshop, there's a ton of great information up there that's available to anybody to try to, you know, sort of learn how to make this change for themselves.
Good stuff. Well, thank you so much for being our guest today.
All right.
Thank you for having me.
Until next time, this is Katie Galley for Lee Cantor. Our guest today, Matt Hines, and everyone here in the Business Radio X family saying, we'll see you in the fast lane.